Fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety, and those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service tick training. The Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Thin Red Line Decon Products, making decontamination as simple as possible for you with decon wipes, shampoo, body wash, and more. Haas Alert, creator of the safety cloud for our roads. Fry Guy Levers and Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tools for the fire service. Silver Arrow Coaching and Consulting, unlock your potential from burnout to brilliance. Crackle Magazine, serving the International Fire Service. EFT Corporation, 40 plus years of innovation in donation and payment processing solutions. Health KPI, teaching you how to track the right data to stay at the top of your game. The Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network. The Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The Five Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you and happy to have you with us. Today, I once again have a returning guest, a good friend, again, that we've never met in person, but we've become good friends through social media and through emails, etc. And that's Inspector Bradley Davidson, Brad Davidson, from Manitoba. And we're going to be discussing some interesting points that we share about two of the great leaders in the fire service, and that is the late Chief Alan Brunicini and the late Chief Bobby Halton. And additionally, we're going to be talking with Brad about his new book, Flames of the Fire, Firefighting Amidst the Explosions. And you're going to be kind of surprised by some of the things that our friend Brad went through in his fire service career. Now, if you like what you hear today, and you want to listen to more episodes, all you have to do is go to our website and across the horizontal menu, select the word podcast, and you'll see our entire library there for you of audios. Now, if you want to see our videos, we have two channels on YouTube. The original channel, which was the numeral 5-Alarm Task Force, and then once we created the corporation, we have a second channel called 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. You can find our videos all there. While you're on our website, you might want to sign up for our newsletter. We'll be having the Spring One coming out in a couple of weeks, and we only send about 4, maybe 5 over the course of the year. We don't send spam, and we don't make you stay on the mailing list. So should you ever want to unsubscribe from our mailing list, all you have to do is just send us an email to dalmatprod@outlook.com. And all you have to do is put the word unsubscribe in the subject line. As soon as we get it, we'll take you off the mailing list. And that's it. We want you to be happy. We want us to be happy. And that's the best way of doing it. To our friends on Facebook, thank you so very much. It has been difficult because of my health to get there too often. And even doing the podcast sometimes can be difficult. But we want to say thanks to all our our supporters and fans on Facebook. We could not be as successful as we are without you having our backs. And that's great for us. We really like that. And we thank you. Now, most of you listen to our audio version of the podcast. We're all over every platform that you can think of for that. However, what's important is that if you have not done so already, and you might be an 8-season follower, but we need something very simple and it's free. All we need for you to do to help us is just leave a review, whether it's stars or a couple of sentences for us on the platform you listen to us on. And that's very important to us. And here's the reason why. Those platforms create an algorithm and they filter into that algorithm whether or not you have good reviews, bad reviews, no reviews, etc. And thus, if someone's looking for a podcast, Bill's Planting Podcast, and there are no views, then the results for that search are going to be very, very low. Very low. But if there are several, not, it doesn't have to be hundreds of thousands, but if you have several good reviews or good star ratings, that's going to bring your name up higher in that search field. So all we ask, please just take a moment, either leave a couple of stars or leave a sentence or two. And listen, if you need to leave constructive criticism, we want to know about that too, because you're entitled to that. And we should listen to you to better the podcast that would help you like it even more. And that's it. That's our business for today. And right after these words, we'll introduce our guest and let you hear about his history, Brad Davidson, right after this. As always, please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography Certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, here's part of their upcoming calendar. April 15th to 16th, the big one, FDIC 2024, Live Fire Aggressive Thermal Imaging Search. Insight Training LLC is grateful to be returning to FDIC 2024 to provide 2 4-hour live fire hands-on sessions for 2 days of training. Lead instructor Thomas Anderson will be leading the Insight Training instructor cadre as we provide hands-on expertise on the proper use, tips and tricks of thermal imaging to enhance the fundamental search efforts on the fire ground. This class combines time and battle-tested search techniques with updated modern thermal imaging technologies designed to take your fire ground searches to the next level. When applied properly, thermal imaging can enhance fundamentally sound-aggressive search crews, thereby making us more efficient and more successful. Communication and positioning of the thermal imaging camera operator for facilitating search efforts is an essential component of this process. Fundamental search methodology relies on sound basics, from moving through the room quickly and efficiently to understanding fire and smoke behavior in a compartment. When combined with modern thermal imaging, firefighters take the upper hand and save lives. This class is about understanding all the tools at our disposal, when to use them, and how to use them properly. coming out on the 2nd through the 5th of May, the IFRT Hot Days in Germany 2024. Insight Training is headed back to Germany. Andy Starnes and Thomas Anderson of Insight Training LLC are grateful to be returning to Germany to train with our friends for charity. Insight Training Brothers in Battle, Rob Ramirez of the Mayday Mindset, Kyle Romagus of Smith-Bohr Cartel will be providing live fire hands-on training May 2nd through May 5th at the amazing facility of International Fire Rescue Training. All proceeds from this event are donated to a hospice unit for children at the local hospital. And coming up on May 13th through the 16th, South Montgomery County Fire Department in Texas, Train the Trainer. Insight Training will be providing our custom 32-hour Train the Trainer thermal imaging program for the host organization of South Montgomery Fire Department in Texas. This program consists of 4 days that are divided into one half day of lecture and one half day of live fire thermal imaging training. The sequence of the course is as follows. Day 1, Introduction to Tactical Thermal Imaging. Day 2, Size Up and Go, No-Go Decision Making. Day 3, Enhanced Search Methodology and Enhanced Stream Placement. And Day 4, Final Tests and Implementation Procedures. This program is the most popular and the most involved of all of our programs. The host organization receives complete access to our complete library of resources, an instructor manual in PDF format, a 300-gigabyte Google Drive folder, and more. This program will be offered May 13th to May 16th, 2024, with a cadre Insight Training instructors. The class size is limited to maintain a 5-to-1 student-to-instructor ratio. South Montgomery County Fire Department, MCESD number 8, 27900 Robinson Road, Conroe, C-O-N-R-O-E, Texas, 77385. Phone 346-573-5254. Please be sure to check the Insight Training LLC website or their Facebook page for registration and additional details. Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for tick training. The Firehouse Tribune has expanded, now bringing you podcasts, presentations, and training blogs. The Firehouse Tribune is an innovative way for emergency services professionals to interact, share ideas, learn, and train. We are inspired by those who came before us and built a path for us to share knowledge and experience with the rest of the emergency services world, where life experiences and training come together. Check out our podcasts, Station Talk, and the 5-Tool Firefighter Podcast. Want us to speak at your department or event? Reach out to us to set up workshops at your firehouse or virtual event on topics including the 5-Tool Firefighter, 5 Key Attributes of the Well-Rounded Firefighter, and 6 Tips to Guide the New Fire Officer. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. For more info, please visit www.firehousetribune.com or email us at fhtribunepodcast@gmail.com. The new Firehouse Tribune Services, where we live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We're firefighters. We're law enforcement. But like everyone else, we have our aches and pains, sometimes from the job and sometimes not. We realize there are risks with this job. However, sometimes something is wrong with us and we don't know it. Now what do we do? Well, LifeScan Wellness Centers are dedicated to saving America's heroes. For most fire and police organizations, LifeScan Wellness Centers will send one of their mobile teams to assess every member of your department with complete and complex physical exams and blood work. Using state-of-the-art medical equipment, LifeScan staff members provide a multi-procedural exam, including cardiac stress tests, basic lab results, and ultrasound exams. LifeScan wellness exams have saved the lives of dozens of firefighters and police officers across the country. They have found tumors, aortic bulges, lung problems, and more, many of which were asymptomatic. However, early detection allowed most of these colleagues to have their personal medical professionals mitigate the health issue that otherwise might have led to a darker time. For more information, please visit their website at lifescanwellness.com. Remember, LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alum Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you. Happy to have you here with us. And on the podcast today is, again, a great friend. We've never met in person. We've spoken through the magic of radio and video waves for several years already. And that is my friend, Bradley R. Davidson from Manitoba, Canada. And just a little background, he retired in 2021 with four decades of service. In the fire world, he currently serves as an advisor to the Canadian Association of Fire Investigators, past regional director for the Canadian Association of Fire Investigators, and past director of the Volunteer Firefighters of Canada. As a consultant, he was part of a project in Saskatchewan, auditing fire stations, and then providing recommendations to the Saskatchewan government via the WCB for Firefighter Cancer Prevention, pro bono. He's still a firefighter health, safety, and wellness advocate, and he promotes this in any fashion he can. He is authoring a new book, which we're going to talk about shortly, about memoirs sharing the tragedies and triumphs of serving, but also shares the loss of one of his personal firefighter friends due to brain cancer. Three times. He finally had surgery and sadly passed. And the book also includes a chapter on cancer prevention. He was a scholarship recipient three times. First one was the FDIC Honeywell DuPont Kevlar Scholarship. He returned the following year as an FDIC instructor. The second one was at FRI IAFC FDSOA Scholarship and took training as a fire department health and safety officer. And third, he was awarded the first ever IFSI Alan V. Brunicini Lifelong Learner Scholarship recipient. Doctor's orders, though, would not allow him to travel to receive this in person. The CFAC also invited him to take the facilitator training in Ottawa for the first responder, R2MR, Road to Mental Readiness Program. Brad, it's a pleasure and an honor to welcome you back to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Steve, and an honor, I might add.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to be talking about two very important topics that Brad is really connected to very well. In the first half of the show, we're going to talk to you about some of his experiences, what he's done as a fire inspector and fire educator, public safety concerns with fire in communities. And he still loves that part of doing that because, as many of us know, 1 ounce of education can save a house full of people. And so if it's your inspector, your fire marshal, wherever you live, work with them. Even if you want to volunteer with them, see if they'll allow it. If you're a trained firefighter, okay? Or you're trained in fire skills, or you're schooled in fire prevention, fire health issues, et cetera. And then in the second part, we're going to talk about his recent book, Flames of the Fire, Firefighting Amidst the Explosions. And we'll get to that in the second half. So, Brad, let's talk about all the positives you really felt and went through. You had a beautiful resume here. You got these three scholarships. And to receive the IFSI Alan V. Brunicini Lifelong Learner Scholarship is just amazing. We all know Chief Bruno. We all know, or we should all know, what he gave to us, what he left to us when he passed. But he was a great giver, teacher, instructor, mentor when he was alive. We lost him all too soon, sadly. And as it turned out, he passed away in an airport, changing from one flight to another flight as he went out to teach again. And as his son has said, he wouldn't have wanted any other way. And that's the kind of man he was. So this is quite an honor for you to receive that. So let's talk about some of the experiences and the positives and even some of the negatives, because listen, firefighting is firefighting, police work is police work, and EMS is EMS work, and they all have their darker sides. And what also really is important to me is how you are also very active in the mental readiness program for firefighters in Canada. So let's talk a little bit about some of your past exploits, experiences, et cetera.
I have several highlights, like, of course, being able to attend Chief Bruno's class in person was just something I never thought possible. Of course, I always wanted to do that, and being able to do that was just totally a highlight. And I even got to joke with him a little bit, or tease him about all the years he spent working on that 52 Mac that he built with his neighbor in the garage next door. And he was talking about values of people at the time, and he mentioned his wife Rita, and he was saying if Rita could, she'd have six fingers on each hand so she could buy more jewelry. And and he said, how much do you think she values jewelry? And you know, before I could even process it, I blurted out, I said, about as much as you value that nice new shiny brass piece you're gonna put on your truck you've been building for the last 30 years.
That's cute. You know, and he always had a way of making you feel comfortable. And I've told this story before, but very early on in our first season, another great friend of this podcast, Chief Dennis Rubin, they were going to be talking about the wing spread six, I think. No, it had to be maybe wing spread five then. But he wanted to talk about it. And he says, I'm going to bring Chief Bruno on. I said, no, don't do that. He goes, why? I said, because I can't talk to him. Because what do you mean you can't talk to him? I said, he's Chief Bruno. I can't. He's like a mogul. He's a firefighting mogul. He says, no. I'll tell you what, Steve. This is what I'll do. You call me, and then I'll put you on hold. I'll call Chief Bruno and bring him onto the phone. I said, okay, but I probably won't be able to talk too much. So he says, well, just give him a chance. So he put me on hold, calls Bruno, puts a call through, goes, Steve, I'm going to bring on Chief Bruno now. And I said, okay. And Chief Bruno comes on, and Chief Rubin says, Chief, I'd like you to meet a good friend of mine. He has a great podcast, Steve Green. And he said, hey, Steve, how they hanging? So, you know, just that put me so much at ease. And it's, you know, I don't know. I guess I was out of the fire service already since 85. But to have him on in the show in 2016 and to be able to be as open and kind as that. And I said to somebody, well, that, you know, that's just, you're just playing up to the show. He goes, no. He says, that's him. He says, that's can be angry at you, but he'll never talk to you angry unless there's a real emergency. He says, but he'd rather teach you than yell at you.
That's right.
And yeah, I learned a lot from that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. He's affectionately called the Godfather of the Fire Service.
Absolutely.
And he had a knack of taking interest in each person he was talking to and pulling out of them information and stories, but he was able to do it in a way that made you feel very comfortable. And learning from him was fun, you know, like it's hard to describe.
But his legacy and what Chief John Vance is doing with the B-Shifter, the B-Shifter program is actually keeping alive so much of what Chief Rubin, Bruno wanted us to be. He knew that not every firefighter could do every single job. And
right.
He wanted you to feel comfortable doing what you're comfortable doing. And you might be an aerial guy, and you might be a great guy in the hose on the ground. And he would try to really magnify your role so that you felt just as involved on the fire ground or in a class as anybody else. And he really is, I think that godfather of the fire service is a great term for him.
I totally agree. And like, I've studied his work in the university courses I took on leadership. And, you know, the more I learned, the more I wanted to know. And he promoted people often on how well, not necessarily on tactics and strategy, he often promoted people on how well they dealt with Mrs. Smith on scene. You know, that's light years. For me, that was a kind of a concept I'd never even heard before, you know?
Same with me, yeah. Yep, it was amazing. I loved reading him when I first joined the department in 77, reading his articles in brand new magazine called Firehouse. And I would probably read those articles at least two or three times over.
Right.
Just to try to sift out and get right to the crux of what he was teaching, the principles of what he was teaching us. And I think that those of us, even who got to know him during our service, and even younger firefighters today who, you know, we lost him, I think it was 2017, 2018, I think we lost him, should still be studying him today.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And luckily, you know, the great team, Chief John Vance, and the whole team, including his son Nick, and others who are on the B shifter team, they carry much over from Chief Bruno. They have the Bruno Learning Center out in Arizona, in Phoenix. And I think that, you know, that speaks a lot to the validity of who he was as a leader in the fire service. And the fact that he authored numerous books, didn't get to finish his second major one. And they've carried that torch on for him. But I think that as we're talking about Chief Bruno and your experiences as an inspector and a firefighter, you've really filled a lot of the roles in the fire service. That many, many are not lucky enough to do that. When I got hurt I was appointed the inspector for our village, I was surprised how much this was in 85, I was still carrying over from what I learned from him. And he didn't talk a lot about fire prevention, but he talked about our responsibility to foster fire prevention. And that was really an important good elbow for us to have from him as well.
Right.
So let's talk about you now. With you had a chance to be a student of his for many years, thank goodness. And so from what you saw from him and what your goals were in your positions through the years, what are some of the things that you saw that needed repair, we'll use that word, or that didn't, that worked really well coming out of the box? Some of your experiences.
Well, I think I was always interested in Bruno's work right from my first few weeks as a rookie. I overheard the assistant chief and the other chief, they were having a friendly argument, and they said, I remember them saying, "Don't give me any of those Chief Brunicini isms." And you know, I was mopping the floor in the truck bay, and I made a mental note. You know, I got to find out like who this is. You know, I mean, and that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I always had my radar, I guess, on for Chief Bruno. And it wasn't until years later that I began really following or being a student, I guess, of his work. And one of the aha moments for me when I was really started digging deep into Chief Bruno's work was The Mrs. Smith philosophy, like, you know, that was something I was never really exposed to. I wasn't prepared for, and I felt that I was really lacking there. Like, a lot of times on scene, there'd be family members or Mrs. Smith, and she's worried about her pills, pictures, pets, slippers, you know, and I was, you know, for many years, I was more focused on the tactical, strategic responsibilities rather than Mrs. Smith. So when I really began studying his work, I was really intrigued and interested in that philosophy.
Yeah, it makes a really big difference. And I've heard people say, well, that's just malarkey. He was talking back then. It wasn't. That was from his heart.
That's right. That was
from his heart. And I know when I learned that Brunoism, it gave me a whole different face on being a firefighter. And it even helped me because I was also an EMT in EMT 2 in North Carolina and EMT 1 in New York State. But I felt that I worked in the synagogue. I was a volunteer firefighter. And I felt, after hearing about that Mrs. Smith thing, I felt that it was my obligation to carry that on with this new avocation that I found was being a volunteer firefighter.
Right.
And I took that and I applied it to my job at the synagogue, dealing with parents and the kids and stuff like that. And I tried to come off with the way he taught us to, is that, yeah, a parent can come in and be really angry. I don't have to talk to them though, as though they're angry. I don't have to get angry to meet them. I can just talk calmly, treat them with respect, and explain easily for them what the situation was. And that changed my whole position for those 4 years to be a much better director of the school, because people realized they could come and talk with me. And even if I asked them to come in because I had a problem with their child, I didn't start castigating the parent. I just told them, these are the issues, and look, how can we work together to make it work, you know, for you and your child, and their preparation for their bar bat mitzvah, or the schoolwork. So I think that I don't really know of anything that he taught to us that should not be as important to us today as it was to him when he just created those ideas.
Yeah, that the customer service model is just fantastic, really. And I can't stress enough how much I believe in it. And another thing that Chief Bruno, I guess being a studying the craft and is teaching it, the customer service model, you start, I don't know if it's getting worse now in as we go on, but he was saying, like, what a great example of a business the fire department is. You know, you call, they call, we ask where you are, what's wrong, we respond, we fix the problem, we thank the people, we do whatever we can at the time, and sometimes a lot of departments will even follow up if there's more things that they can do for the owner. We leave, go back to the station, reset, and we're ready to go to the next call. And it's such a simple, effective service. And it seems like, and Bruno mentioned it during one of his classes, you know, customer service in a lot of areas outside of the fire service is not what it used to be.
That's true. That's true. And even, I'll tell you the truth, even the fire service is a little one step back from what he, still today, because there are those who believe he was old-fashioned. I think he was a futurist. I think he saw the future of firefighting and wanted to be the best it could be.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. She was, his vision was to me was miles ahead of most of us.
Oh yeah. Very true. Very true. All right. So let's turn back to some of your time as an inspector. Why did you choose to move to inspector from firefighting? And what are some of the weird things you've seen over those years as an inspector?
Well, as I mentioned before the show, my roles started expanding at my place of employment kind of by accident, I would say. It was just I'm a person that likes to research. And before I started really getting into the meat and potatoes of the fire service, like fire inspecting, fire investigating, I was always looking up NFPA codes and national fire codes, because that's where, the money meets the road kind of thing. And so I started educating myself with the NFPA codes and standards and the national fire codes. And then post-fire, or actually pre-fire, we'd do pre-fire planning, or we'd respond to a fire. And the next month, we'd go to the same fire. And after a while, you start to think, well, one of these days, we're not going to get lucky. So you do an inspection, you write up your report, you have your recommendations, and sometimes you're successful in getting those recommendations enacted. Sometimes you're not. I know, case in point, there was a conveyor way, and we had gone to a fire there so many times. And so finally, I started to be kind of hard-headed about recommendations, like recommending sprinkler systems be installed to protect that asset. And I got a lot of flack. I got really a lot of heat for pushing too hard, actually. And then I went on vacation to southern Manitoba, where I am currently. And I got a phone call from my brother, who is a safety co-chair. And he said, "Brad, you know that conveyor way you're telling me about, you had so many concerns with and you were getting so much heat about?" He said, "It burned down yesterday." And I heard the damages were like $7 million. And firefighters' lives were put in jeopardy, needlessly, really. And at the time of the sprinkler systems, two of them would have cost $30,000. So, that... I think that started me on the path really of trying to prevent the fires, because we had 72 fires at our industrial complex, which was a lot, but we also had 1,800 accidents where people were injured. So we had to change our whole culture. A lot of the fires never even hit the books, kind of thing. And a lot were caused by hot work. So, we didn't reinvent the wheel. The NFPA had the hot work permit process. So we started utilizing that, and the workplace accidents were not acceptable anymore. So, we had a whole culture to change. And I'm proud to say I was part of it. It wasn't easy, but we had to go through those aches and pains to get where we had nearly zero accidents and nearly zero fires.
That's amazing. I had how the public responds to us is very interesting. When I'd go to visit stores at the mall, make sure their emergency exit was accessible, they didn't have a big pileup of cardboard and papers like that. That part, they were... do you have to come now? I said, yeah, I'm here now. This is the time to do the inspection. But I had, when I first, it was really probably in the first 2 weeks I started as the inspector. I was driving, I had a video store back in those days across the street from a gas station. And I'd often pull in there myself. And there were big signs, as they are still out today, but this is back in 85, big signs saying no smoking at gas pumps. So I had left the store and I was coming, turning around, and I see a guy start putting the nozzle in his tank and he lights up a cigarette. So I had my trusty little ticket book with me. I pulled around and pulled in front with my lights on. And I said, stop what you're doing. He said, says who? I showed my gold badge. And he says, what's the problem? I said, you. You're the problem. I said, walk away from the pump, from the handle. Okay. Now, put that cigarette out over there. Stomp it with your foot until there's nothing left of it. He says, what if I don't? I said, not a problem. I'll issue you a $500 ticket right now, and you'll be in court on Tuesday night. All right, I'll do it. And he said, why did you have to do that? I said, no, there are signs right on the pumps. No smoking at pumps. I didn't do anything. You did. I was here to mitigate, because one of the ashes, lit ashes, fall off your cigarette in the wrong direction. Maybe the wind blows a little bit. You would have looked like the burning scarecrow, and your car would have gone up, and you could have blown up the tanks. Just with that, I said, yeah. Did you ever think of that, about smoking where you're pouring gas? No, I guess I never did. I said, all right. Well, you're still going to get a ticket. It's not going to be a $500 ticket, but you're going to get a ticket, and you better be in court tomorrow night, Tuesday at 8. I'll be there. And, you know, it was my first real enforcement, so I was a little bit nervous, but I sure felt good when I drove away, because I could have stopped. I may have stopped what could have been a disaster, you know?
Sure.
And that's the problem, is that people don't think outside their own little circle.
That's many right.
People, I shouldn't say everybody. Many people don't think outside their circle. And that being the case, when you work outside the rule book, there are going to be fouls, there are going to be problems. And that's what the chief said to me, goes, do it to prevent problems. That's what I want you to do. Do the task to help prevent problems so that we don't have to respond to problems.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic. I had the same kind of incident. Actually, a few of us did with propane delivery drivers. They were delivering bobtail tanks to fill up a 18 to 20,000 gallon propane tank, and they'd be smoking. And I remember one incident, the chief come along, a guy, and he actually had a leak in his spill hose. So he was creating his own vapor cloud, and he was smoking. You know, as I mentioned in the book, looking back, it's hard to believe now, but we had a lot of serious industrial fires, one of which I just mentioned, but we also had approximately a dozen explosions, you know, some of which could have been prevented. You know, preventing some of the explosions would have probably saved lives and some people from being critically injured.
And the problem is that usually at the bottom of these issues is money.
That's true. That's very
true. They're trying to save money. They're trying not to spend money. Or they're trying only to do the basic minimum they have to do. And all too often, you, me, and the great people who are inspectors around our two countries, we don't operate that way. We have a rule book. And it's a rule book for only one thing, life, safety. That's what it's all about.
I had to change gears too. A lot of it was negative a lot of it was negative things coming my way, you know, like common sense things. I would write up a report, inspection report, and at one time it like the only feedback wasn't, you know, good point, Brad. We'll try to prevent this. One of the negative feedbacks was, well, everybody has an opinion, but unfortunately yours isn't qualified. And I look back with it not at it now, and it's kind of funny, but it prompted me on the next turnaround to be the qualified person. So even being qualified, I also had to change gears, not to really put people in a predicament, but try coach them and try word in my report that it's not necessarily my opinion anymore. This is the code. This is how you're in contravention of the code. And then at the end, I would simply state, I would recommend that you follow the code as it's set out here in my report. And it still got the message across, and but it left responsibility with more onus on the property owner.
Right. And that's where it belongs. You know,
Right.
that guy knew what was going on, didn't want to do anything because he didn't want to spend any money to possibly create a safer environment. He chose not to. You pay the price. One way or the
Right.
other, you're going to pay the price. There's no doubt about it. But you'd rather pay it, if you have to pay the price, you'd rather pay a ticket, an inspection failure ticket, than losing your whole store or your whole company.
I also had kind of a humorous incident, and at the time, my head really wasn't in the game. I was actually on bereavement leave, and I got a call from a manager, and he said, "We have to travel to a outlying mine to investigate a fire." And I said, "Well, you know, I'm on a bereavement leave, and I don't really fancy traveling or anything." But we did go. I think it was the following day. And it was a provincial authority really was chewing everyone a new one. But I think that was because I can't really explain. I just listened and I started taking notes. And then I started taking notes, and then I asked the provincial authority, like, are you so upset about this? Like, I left my emotions totally out. And then he'd raise his voice and pound the table. And but I knew the good thing was I had the experience, the training, the knowledge to know his sore points were really had no basis. His accusations had no basis. Like, you know, and I even got to use one of Bruno's quotes. You know, this provincial authority was upset with the fire department because they didn't pour any water. Well, you know, that's always an option at a fire. If it's on the ground and it's in the winter, pouring water is just going to create more risk. You know, and then in Bruno's saying there, you know, risk a lot to save a lot, risk a little to save when there's little to save, and risk nothing when there's nothing to save. You know, in my report, I let the fire department off the hook because they, in my opinion, they did exactly the right thing by not even pouring water, because the building was on the ground. It was, you know, all they did, would have done was create more risk. So I guess that was humorous. And then, as a side note, I studied a fatal line of duty death in Enderby, BC, where a lumber producing facility heated up a sea can, and there was just a very minimal amount of fuel in the sea can, but it heated it up enough to for it to vaporize the fuel in the sea can. And during the mop up of the fire, like the fire was actually over, extinguished, this sea can exploded. One of the doors blew off and struck a young fire captain. 27 years old. As a note of interest, when I was investigating the fire where the provincial authority was so upset at that community's fire department lack of response, which was the right thing to do, we also had a CCAN incident that was a near miss. So to me, that was one of the most interesting investigations I've done. Was it when I got back?
Excuse me, what is a C10?
It's a CCAN is a intermodal container, you know, like they have on the ships.
Yeah.
Yeah. Intermodal container. I call it a CCAN. That's probably the unofficial term for it, but they're CCANs are used for storage all over the country.
Right.
And in this case, in Ender, BC, the CCAN was being used for storage. And when it exploded, one of the 250-pound doors struck the young fire captain. And a few years later, I'm investigating a fire, and our own fire department had a major fire in one of these CCANs. And I talked to the IC and some of the guys that were on the nozzle that went interior on it, and the IC had the smarts to ask the owner, is there any dangerous goods inside? And his reply was, no, there's nothing in it. So the two brothers, actually, young men, went interior, attacked the fire, wrapped up and left. I arrived the following day, did my investigation, and I found a 20-pound liquid propane gas container that pressure relief valve had been cycling. That alone could have leveled the CCAN, but right next to the propane tank that was with the pressure relief valve cycling, right next to it was a pallet of oxidizers.
Oh, God.
So we had the makings of a major catastrophe, because the CCAN had dangerous goods. The pressure relief valve was cycling, but it didn't. The tank didn't blow. And less than 30 feet away was a large electrolytic process, a very large electrolytic process, that had all the air tanks and propane burners set up to heat the building. And if any of that building got involved because of the CCAN, shutting down the air makeup unit would have produced copious amounts of hydrogen gas. So, you know, that was an interesting investigation, I would say.
Yeah, that is amazing. And the fact for that gentleman who said to you, no, there's nothing dangerous in there, means it's a person who has no idea what he's doing.
That's correct.
Right. And, I've always thought about, we put a bunch of our heads together, that we could write a book, Danger for Idiots, or something like that. And I am still, I read the news blasts that come through from Firehouse Magazine and from Fire Engineering. And sometimes I am just amazed at these situations that we come into, even though we supposedly got what we thought we got was full, complete information from the call taker, sent over to the dispatcher to us. But there have been so many times where one ball is dropped, and that one ball being dropped in communication can change the entire picture from a small incident to a major conflagration, a major loss of life, something like that, just because we're trying to hide stuff.
That's correct.
And there is no excuse for that. To me, that is just like perjury.
True.
Okay? You tell a fire official, a ranking fire official on scene, that you don't have anything dangerous or inflammable in your CCAN. Next thing you know, that just wasn't true.
That's true.
So, in that case, if that had happened in my zone, I would have cited them. he would have probably gotten a $250 to a $500 fine. And I was very lucky because the judge in our village, I knew very, very well. He was a member of the synagogue where I had been working. And he and I just hit it off. We'd go out to lunch maybe once a month. And we'd just talk about stuff, Jewish stuff, firefighting, the inspection stuff, and the court work. And he says, you know, he says, I've had a few inspectors here over the years before you got here, Steve. But he goes, you know, in the last 4 or 5 months, he says, I've had some of the best cases I've had coming through on your tickets.
Well, that's good.
He says,
that's pretty good.
And he said, and I also see that on a number of them, you put a positive comment for the person being tagged because they responded to you and said, you know, they knew they got caught. They responded to you. They knew you were coming back for a reinspection, but you didn't tell them when. He says, and that's what I like. He says, because then I have the ability, if you have to write another ticket to them, now it compounds one on the other. And, you know, I didn't do the job. Listen, I wasn't paid for it. I was still being a volunteer inspector. But I did the job. My family and I lived about 3/4 of a mile from the firehouse. And I treated those the same way I would want my house to be treated, my family to be treated. And and I treated the community like it was my home, because it was. And it was a small village, but we were very busy right on the edge of the city of Syracuse. And there was just a lot of damn work to do between rescue and fire and fire sure. prevention. You know?
Yep.
And there were some that were great receivers. They were very receptive to our concepts, our ideas, our programs. And then there were there were ones who blame us for Krakatoa. You know, we caused the biggest explosion on the face of the earth because we're firefighters. We caused it. Yeah. But that's where we have to kind of open our heart again to, and our mind to what we learned from Chief Bruno. And he would say, never yell back.
Right.
Because nothing happens when you yell. But you can teach.
Yeah, I had two or three incidents that were quite memorable to me now, where people were being very disrespectful and yelling and screaming. And I pat myself on the back on those particular incidents where I just stuck to the facts. Like them being upset didn't change things. You know, the code was what it was, and the code said what it did, and I didn't have to really explain myself, you know, like. And later, because I kept my composure, most of them come back later and apologize.
That's smart. It is a challenging, whether we're just firefighters, we're line officers, chief officers, or inspectors. The job is not easy. We love it.
No.
We love it. It takes a heavy toll on us as firefighters, both men and women. Is there a risk to it? Absolutely. You can't be a firefighter and be oblivious to the concept of risk. Every call, as we've seen now with the struck buys, the high level of struck buys, at least in this country, and firefighters, you know, last weekend, we had three line of duty deaths in 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah. And they just didn't have to happen, you know. And then we get the struck buys where they blast through, even though the zone is marked, there's lighting, there are cones, there's flares, everything to keep people away from the scene. There are those who are impaired one way or another, just drive, plow right through it. And they have taken a lot of lives of firefighters, EMS personnel, even road crews have lost their lives to these people. And then, you know, when you stop them, and I remember my very first drunken auto collision was a guy hit a guy in a Lincoln, T-boned who had been drinking, we found out very quickly, T-boned a little Volkswagen Beetle with a family of four. And it was our first response district, so we went, and we went over to the Beetle. There was nothing left. We basically, right. Well, how'd you get him out? How'd you extricate him? I said, we didn't. We just opened the door and ran the hose, basically. That's what we had to do. And so we go over to this guy, and as often happens with people who are inebriated or high on drugs, they become very limber. So in the case of an accident, they often slide under the dash and are saved by the engine wall.
Right.
So we had a lift. Those days we didn't have a hearse, so we had our come along. So we wrapped the come along around the dash and attached it to the hood and pulled it out. And this guy is screaming and yelling now, look what you did to my car. You ruined my car. This is a, you know, $15,000 car. You know, this is way back in 77. So he goes, and I said, sir, you better shut up now while the shutting up is good. He goes, well, who are you to tell me to shut up? And our trooper, who always would come in for a cup of coffee on his morning shift or evening shift, whenever he was working, a trooper was working that night. And he said, you think they did this? So he grabbed him, shoved his, he said, well, what could I have done? I couldn't have hurt anybody with a little tap like that. Well, the Beetle was compressed, basically.
Right.
And the cop, the trooper said to him, yeah, I guess you didn't do anything except to them. And then he sees, we put the flashlight in, he sees all the blood, guts, and gore. And he's turning around puking his guts out and stuff like that. And then Ned threw him against the car. He says, you're under arrest for vehicular manslaughter under DUI. And he said, I didn't do it. He says, you did. So might as well just admit to it now, because I'm taking you from here to the county court. Going to go to jail overnight. You'll be arraigned tomorrow morning. He says, but you have no way of getting out of this. Everything shows us that it was all your fault. And and that was, we knew Ned, we were comfortable with him, but it was the first time he was right there when we needed him. And, this guy wanted to fight. And, you know, we wouldn't fight, but we let Ned do our talking for us. And, he got 18 years. He killed a family of four. Two children and the parents. And, you know, no matter what, it's not easy for us either. Yeah, we get the bad guy, but we still have to find out next of kin are and notify them and stuff like that. It was tough. And some of these calls, as we all know today, many of us remember some of those calls still too vividly for our own good.
Right.
And that's why we have PTSD in the fire service, in EMS, and in our law enforcement brothers and sisters as well. You can't do a job in public safety and not be affected to it. You can't be a robot. We're not, automatons of the old science fiction days. We're not robots of today. We're humans, and our heart beats just like the people we serve. And it just takes a lot out of you when you get to a scene that there's nothing you could do to have, you know, there's nothing you go back to the barn with more dejection and more sadness than you had to be at a scene that you couldn't have made any difference at. You just have to pick up the pieces. And we all have them. If you've been in 5 years or more, you've had at least one already. And some of our younger men and women are seeing it even earlier in those first 5 years. But the fact is that, you know, you have shown your dedication to the welfare of the citizens of your communities, and actually for the welfare of the people of the wonderful country of Canada. because you guys face the same thing that we do. We face what you do. And yet, as much as it hurts us, we still go through the job. We still do it. We might take us a day to recover after something really tragic, but we'll come back and we'll do the job just as best as we did that first day. And that's
true.
Important. And that's important. That's what's important. All right. But, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay.
No. Before we take a break, go ahead.
Oh, well, we are exposed to trauma and sometimes post-traumatic stress disorder or moral injury is just a natural response to an unnatural event, you know.
Right.
And the longer you serve, the more you're exposed.
Yeah, that's true. The more exposure you have. And, you know, it's tough. Sometimes we have to, the old phrase, gird our loins and pull the belt a little notch tighter just to give us that fortitude to go in and do the job we have to do. It's not always easy. And if you're not an active public safety worker, even if, you know, even a recovery driver, tow truck driver, they see the same crap that we do. And they have the same problems that we do. You know, it's one thing to tow a car from a meter that wasn't paid or something like that. It's a whole different thing to have to respond to a 2, 3, 4 vehicle accident where there's loss of life and traumatic injuries, even for them. And I've talked to them over the years, and they say, yeah, it can be a really tough job to do. And so that's something we have to be in mind of. But, you know, with somebody like you who is so dedicated to the cause and the experience you put yourself through to better yourself with one goal in mind, to better serve the people.
True.
That's
it.
Yeah, it's, you know, why did I go through an acrophobe like me? Why did I go through in my last fire college, state fire college in North Carolina, did I take high level rescue? You know, I hated getting above 10 feet. I hated getting on top of a ladder. But I had to, you know, you have to do what you have to do.
And, that's true.
And took that class, passed it with flying colors. I was both a rescuer. I was a patient being lowered down through, you know, in a basket with 3 firefighters around me. They did a great job, and I tried to do just as well for them. But the fact is, I learned it not just for my own sake to help beat my acrophobia, but I did it because who knew if there was going to be a day 2 days later that we'd have to climb our 8-story office building and have to do a level, you know, rescue from there, from a window in there or the roof of that building. I didn't want to be the one who had to back out.
Right.
So
can we break now?
Yeah, we're going to take a break now. So folks, if you're watching the video, you won't see anything different. If you're listening to the audio, well, you know, there'll be a couple of public service announcements, and then we're going to be back with our guest, Brad Davidson, as we talk about his book, Flames of the Fire, Firefighting Amidst the Explosions. So we're going to be right back right after this short pause. As always, please stay tuned. The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross leg, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything! What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their task to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
The physical and mental demands of a firefighter place major stress on our minds and body, and especially our heart. Far too many of our brothers and sisters in the fire and emergency service are lost each year due to cardiac arrest. In fact, statistics show that those of us active in this profession are much more susceptible to cardiac arrest than the general population. Too often, ignoring the warning signs is a fatal decision. Your body will definitely be signaling to you that something is wrong. A feeling that you have never had before. If you don't feel well, don't make it your farewell. Seek medical attention immediately. If someone under your command or in your unit is not feeling well, don't send them home. Don't send them to the bunk hall. Insist they get checked immediately. Let's change the culture in our profession, in our departments, of ignoring the warning signs our bodies are telling us. Visit IAFC.org to learn how.
This message is brought to you by the International Association of Fire Chiefs and this podcaster.
Are you one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You end up driving below the speed limit? It's no big deal, right? Wrong. The truth is, your reaction times slow way down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
And welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green, and joining me today is, a wonderful friend that I've met several years ago online. We've never met in real life, but I've been so lucky over these eight and a half seasons, meeting some wonderful people in the fire service, just terrific people, from rookie firefighters to chiefs, like we talked about, Chief Bruno, and always learn from it. So in this segment, Brad, let's talk about your new book, how it's doing, Flames of the Fire, Firefighting Amidst the Explosion. And what I really like to start with is the background. What brought you to decide to write the book?
Well, Steve, I guess I realized at the time when we were responding to explosions and that kind of thing that it had an impact on me, and it was interesting. Like it may have been traumatic and it may have been dangerous. Dangerous in a way that, like, I feel that roadway incidents are more dangerous than fires and explosions. That's just my thing. But we responded to many incidents, molten metal runaways from an industrial furnace. The molten metal on numerous occasions was 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. And as I mentioned in the prologue of the book, you know, we would hose the edges of the molten material to try contain it, to try prevent other fires and problems when the furnace sprung a leak. But I've been in dangerous situations before, residential firefighting, but in an industrial setting, I really felt like I was jumping from the frying pan into the fire. We could hear rumblings of explosions and the smoke and the dust and the shaking of the building. And I remember thinking a couple of things. And one was, am I going to walk out of this? You know, like, it was intense. And, you know, turnout gear only protects you so much and really isn't the level of protection you need in a molten metal spill. And our guys would often burn their turnout gear, which tells you they're in heat way beyond what they should be. So So my recurring thought at a few of those calls was, am I going to walk out of here? Or is this going to be the one that takes me out? And also in the prologue, I made a mental note that the exit was somewhere behind me, but I was ready to go at any time, but we didn't leave. And while we were containing that molten metal, the conch, one of the biggest fears I had for whatever reason, was the concrete. Is the concrete in the building going to be able to take this? Because the building was shaking as during the explosions. I didn't know what was happening per se when the building was shaking and things were exploding. But what we found out later was the concrete wasn't tolerating the heat. The concrete was spalling. Where chunks of concrete where we were actually blowing out of the floor. Hard hat sized chunks of concrete were blowing out of the floor, sometimes through the molten metal, creating a geyser or shower of molten metal spray.
Okay.
And you know, that when we were exposed to that kind of thing more often than I would have cared to. But, you know, that's just one instance where we were firefighting literally amidst the explosions.
Yeah, that's a pucker factor for you.
Yeah, that was a pucker factor. And it's comical now, but, you know, the rest of the guys were embarrassed to tell the chief they burnt their turnout gear. You know, they thought they might be in trouble or something. But that's just how intense the heat was. And I remember that heat was intense. Like you could feel it right through your turnout gear, that, you know, especially when it comes out at 2,800 degrees. And we had many molten metal runaways that we responded to. Usually if that part of the facility called us, we knew it was bad. We knew right away if they called us, it's going to be bad, because that means it's out of control. And we had many other explosions. We had an autoclave. We had a industrial autoclave blow a valve right off the bottom of the autoclave with an operator nearby. And the operator ran to our office and was obviously in shock. But he ran to our office to report it. And I thought he broke his arm or his foot or something. And I knew the history of these autoclave buildings, that some of them, when they exploded, they leveled the building. So when the person was reporting the explosion at the autoclave, I asked him what was wrong, because I thought he was in shock because of personal injury. Well, he was near the explosion when it happened. And he said, it's not me. He said, it's the autoclave. And I said, okay, so what's wrong with the autoclave? And he said, it just blew up. So when I responded, I self-responded with the pumper before anybody else got there. And I wasn't sure if I was going to find a building standing. But it was just a very loud explosion, because the molten metal and the sulfur were added to the autoclave and it just blew the valve right off of it. Thankfully, nobody was killed, but that was the kind of explosions we responded to. Two others were explosions involving hydrogen. In one of the incidents, explosions involving hydrogen, there was a person standing right there, and it blew off his hard hat, his glasses, and his belt buckle right out the window of the building and across the roadway, but he wasn't blown out the window.
Wow.
And there was another one. I was in a building in this facility doing an inspection, and this airline blew up, 8-inch airline, and a piece of the shrapnel hit the building I was in. So I didn't know what was happening. I covered up thinking that something was happening in the building I was in, but it wasn't. It was several hundred feet away, where this airline exploded and sent shrapnel flying all over the place at incredible speed. And pieces of this pipe penetrated buildings, conveyor ways. And the furthest piece away, shrapnel landed and went through the roof of an apartment building. pie-shaped piece of metal from this pipe, and they didn't find that piece of metal until spring, because there was a hole in the roof and the snow was melting and leaking into the living room. So a carpenter crawled up in there and pulled out a shard of this metal, and that was hundreds of yards away.
Amazing. It there's no doubt those were real trying events. The only thing I can think of, something that I went through, was that we had a paint factory in our first response district. And luckily, our chief, because we're just outside the city of Greensboro, so we were in Guilford County, and our chief had set up, along with other chiefs, our own box alarm system, not how they ring, but rather a box, like if we got 1712, 17 was our station, 1712, that means we had a vapor cloud or gas issue or something like that. So we get called out to this paint plant because there was a mixture up on the third level that was getting too hot and over spilling its tank. So we six of us hauled up, three of us hauled up two and a half, and the other three guys brought up an inch and a half. We didn't have inch and three quarters in those days. And we brought up there, we got them charged. But the problem was, in those days, every apparatus had two radios, one that was built into it and one for the officer. Firefighters, we didn't have them. So we had put on our SCBAs, we go up there, and we're just about to open the bail on the smaller hose, and we start hearing the horns on the trucks, on the aerials going, you know, nonstop. I said, what the hell's that racket? And finally, the lieutenant who rode with us was able to hear on his radio, do not put any water on that incident. This substance is explosive with water. He says, okay. So they're calling everybody to bail out. You know, we had to bail. So we had to drop the hose. Unfortunately, when we dropped the two and a half, the buckles cracked. So now we have water spraying all over the stairwell, a three-story stairwell. And we got the hell out of Dodge. And luckily, it just kind of simmered down on its own. And then we went back and were able to use surface foam on it, AFFF in those days. Our chief was a big proponent of AFFF in those days. Of course, we didn't know its danger.
Right.
I'm very lucky that in the two departments I served, that I was never had any on me. I got maybe some on my boot, but that was it. I mean, I've never, but we know now that that was a very dangerous chemical that could have occurred. But the fact is that we responded, and I had never seen the captain or the lieutenant like doubtful of all the other calls we had been on with them. They were really on the ball with that. But they were both kind of taken aback with this one. And we went back to our firehouse for our two stations. And the chief sat down with us and talked. He said, listen, you guys did everything right. You know, when we got the call, we didn't get any notice that there was a problem with putting water on that solvent. He said, so, but, you know, I said, well, it would have been easier if we all had radios. He goes, yeah, I know. I would love to do that, but there's no money in the budget for that right now. But I said, well, then it's just got lucky enough that the lieutenant heard the call on the radio. All we heard were the air horns from the various aerials. He says, no, you guys did right. I'm glad you dropped the hoses and got the hell out of Dodge. He goes, that's the way it should have been. I can always replace a hose. I just can't replace you.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. So, it, you know, those, that was probably the scariest scariest call I went on that had to do. But I was still relatively young then. I think I'd been in about a year and a half at that point. So I still needed some curing, as we say.
Right.
Do it with good wood. We cure the wood. But all these, I mean, this seems like a very high number of occurrences over this your stage as a regular firefighter before you even got to being an inspector.
That's true. And the book is really a Reader's Digest version of a lot of them, you know, just the most memorable. I probably never mentioned I was also a hazmat instructor.
No.
And went through a process of being operations trained, technician trained, and then eventually I was the instructor. But one of our hazmat calls involved a spill of 6,000 pounds of explosives.
Oops.
On a public roadway. And we just called senior officers out to that call because of the risk.
Yeah.
But we mitigated that call. I described it in the book. And luckily, by the time we got the explosive truck, the explosives cleaned up and made inert and put the tandem truck back on its wheels, our radios failed because we had a repeater nearby. Our radio repeater failed. We started having problems all throughout that call of the spilled explosives to then respond from that emergency to another one where a senior's personal care home was on fire. Mm-hmm. And we self-responded to that call because the fire was caused by hot work. And the person that caused the fire didn't pick up a phone or pull a fire alarm. He drove to the nearest fire station to report it through town. So we could already see the smoke blocks away when we realized that the municipal chief and department hadn't responded. We just jumped in the truck and self-responded. So that was a kind of a busy, interesting day. And another memorable call. It wasn't really a call. A policeman in his cruiser brought us a live IED. And he was kind of panicked and nervous because he was young, but he had myself and another supervisor check it out in his car. And it was certainly a live IED, absolutely. And
it's amazing.
The scary part about that, Steve, was it was primed, it was ready to go. Like, all it needed really was a certain amount of probably static electricity because it was armed, ready to go. And when I checked it out, as like he asked me to, I looked in the front seat and it was sitting like inches away from his mobile radio that produces 25 watts when you key it up to transmit.
Sure.
And that could have easily set it off. And kind of a funny part to this story is my manager wasn't happy that we got involved anyway, but it was brought to us. And then he later said, "Well, what, Brad, what did you think when you saw that?" And I just started laughing. I said, "I was way too close." but we called appropriate people and it was disarmed. But
yeah, that's, you know, some of the calls we go on. I don't think, especially today, many years after you and I were on the hoses, it's a lot different today. I remember probably the worst call my buddy and I were on, and we're still, I met this kid in the, being devoted into the fire department in 77. He's still my best friend today. He'll be down in a week or two to visit. But we, it was a Saturday night, Sunday morning, about 1:30. We got toned out. he was sleeping at the station that night with our regular day, regular caretaker. We had the other second bunk room where there were two cots in there. And we'd sleep over if we wanted to just sleep there, you know, sleep there during the weekend. We could get out of the house and sleep there for the weekend or whatever. So Rich was sleeping there, and we got toned out for a vehicle crash with fire entrapment. So, as I'm driving down, my apartment was only just over a half mile from the firehouse. So I'm usually one of the first ones there who were coming by car. And so I got in there and on the scanner, as I'm driving down, the chief is screaming, "Get me water. I need water now. We got an entrapment. We need water now." And so I was there, Rich was there, and our driver, Bruce, was the 24-hour caretaker. So their job was to get that first apparatus out and let the rest of the station fill in behind it. And so she says, "Get me now. Whoever you got, just get the engine over here now." So Bruce called to me and says, "Steve, get up in the right seat." I said, "Me? He goes, just get up there and do what I tell you." And so we turned out responding. It was one easy road around the corner from the station to get to the accident, but we could see the loom up once we turned in that direction. And the chief, and our driver said, "Hey, there's a hydrant right around the corner. When we come on Friendly, we'll connect there." And the chief said, all of a sudden, like it was ESP. He said, "Don't stop and hook up to the hydrant. We'll backlay it. Just get me the water, you know, the 500 gallons as fast as you can." And so we pulled right up. And one of our other volunteers, well, he was one of our paid guys, actually lived just two houses away. So he came running out in a t-shirt, shorts, and bare feet. And he came and pulled well, we didn't have LDH in those days. Our LDH was 3 inches. So we pulled the hydrant hose, and Rich and I got out. And I said, "Rich, you take the nozzle and I'll take the heave." And we got on there. The worst part was that when we got on the scene, the guy was still alive. He was still screaming in that truck. And it was one of those old Chevy trucks that had the gas cap right behind the door, the driver's cab.
Yep.
So he turned out he had been inebriated. We didn't know or care about it at that point. But he swerved, lost his balance, car flipped on its left side, the gas cap came off, the sparks, set it up. And we, with our last drops, we got the last flames out. The EMS supervisor showed up because at this point they had hydraulic tools. We didn't have them on our engines at that point in time anywhere in the county. It was just the ops director of EMS, of the county EMS, had it. But, you know, when you think how big our county was, only having one pair for the entire county for almost a year was really tough. But we got them out, and EMS was there. We got them on the stretcher, you know, burn sheets on there, putting the hypostatic water on there. And he wound up living 3 days in the burn center, but lost his life at that. But it is, and I've said this before in the show, and I'll caution you again. The scent of burning human flesh is something that once you smell it once, you will never, ever be rid of that smell in your mind. Never. And here it is. We're talking about there's maybe 78, early 79. And here we are in 2024. And just talking about it, I have the acrid taste in my mouth.
Sure.
You know, we don't get to pick our choose and calls.
No.
You know, and I think your book is telling that story, that's not the call I decided I'd go on. We go on the calls.
Right. Right. Or one that you're really prepared to respond to, but you do. But when you sign up, you don't expect those kind of things. And, you know, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the awesome people that were willing to contribute to the book. Like our mutual friend Andy Sarnes made a contribution. Brian Humphreys is a local best-selling author. He made a valuable contribution, as did Dr. Richard Gasaway.
Sure.
Situational awareness.
Right. Richard's great.
Jerry Tracy and Todd Ledoux from Lifescan Wellness.
Oh, Todd and I have been friends for well over 30 years. We're both
right?
From the greater Boston area.
They were very gracious to had no qualms about contributing, because they were all worthy topics, worthy relevant topics. And another person that didn't get to respond that I was really looking forward to, and he had agreed to do so, was Chief Bobby Halton.
He had agreed. Yeah.
May he rest in peace. Like one of the most well-read, educated, and eloquent people I've ever met. And he was ready, willing, and able. And as I understood, he was working on a piece just for the book. And I was really looking forward to that. But unfortunately, he passed away.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not just my story. It's kind of our stories, you know.
Yeah. And I think we have to look at, when we look at people like the late Bobby Halton, the late Chief Bruno, these were pillars. They weren't just firefighters. They weren't just firefighters. They became pillars in our communities, in the fire service communities of both our countries.
True.
And I think that, you know, I remember when I got Bobby to be on the podcast, and this podcast went 3 hours.
Sure.
Never done a 3 hour. I never scheduled even a 3 hour podcast, but he's just so brilliant.
Oh,
and he is
absolutely.
He was so well read. He could quote you a page number in a paragraph when he's citing something from a book.
Yeah.
And so when I told people like Andy and Nick Higgins from Firehouse Tribune about that went that long, they said, "What are you going to do? You got to cut it." I said, "Me? You think I'm going to edit Bobby Halton? Are you nuts? I'm just going to put it out there. And people want to listen to it, because we weren't doing video in that time. People want to listen to it, we'll listen to it. They don't want to listen to it, they don't have to. But I'm not going to try to edit Bobby Halton." I said,
right.
But he was gracious. And he, again, made quotes from several books, the page, the paragraph number, and this idea that I read about, I want to share, because yes, it's not specifically fire service, but it's about who we are and the job we do.
Right.
He was just amazing. Just an amazing, a walking encyclopedia of all manners of books. And he read all types of books, nonfiction, fiction, governmental, anything about the fire service, he just inhaled. Of course, if he hadn't written it himself, you know. So just a great, great pillar, these two men. And I don't think our fire service would be what it is today without having had their leadership and bringing Bobby into fire engineering, because I think he brought it to a totally different level than when I first started reading it as a rookie. And just same way reading Firehouse, I learned from Chief Bruno. I read every one of his articles a couple of times to learn, because I was a nobody. This was not one of the things I could fake myself through. Hey, I can do that. I could do that with a lot of other stuff, guitar, stuff like that. But fire service, I couldn't do that. So I depended on these leaders to teach me, whether it was going to a conference or going to a seminar or whatever. These two gentlemen led me on my path in the fire service, and luckily I got to have a little of them when I was out of it and starting up the podcast. So I feel very lucky to have been able to have them on the show. And some people are amazed that you had him on our show. Yeah, why? Well, he's Bobby Halton. I said, yeah, that's why I had him on the show, because he is Bobby Halton, you know. And I think that these stories that you share in the book, and I think that's the most important readers I want for this book are the new up and comers.
Sure.
Should we need to read your book? That should be part of their educational requirement. This is one of those books that they need to read, just like they should read Management by Chief Bruno. And I forget Bobby's, the name of his book, the big book he had right around that time. I don't remember the name of it, but those should be required reading for every rookie.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, because you can learn so much in rookie school, and being a probie at the academy, you can learn a lot there. But there's a lot you don't learn in school, just like in life. You go to school, you go to college, you learn a lot, but you are not prepared for life just because you went to, college.
That's true. It's a good foundation.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good foundation, but you have to build on it.
That's right.
If you want to be the best you can be as a firefighter, no matter what job you aspire to reach, whether you want to be just a firefighter, you want to be a line officer, you want to be on the truck company, you want to be to drive the truck, you want to be on the aerial team, you want to be the cans man or the chains guy, whatever you want to be in the fire service, you should read the writings of these two men. And you should read our guest Bradley Davidson's book, because it was a little what Brad has talked to us about today. He went through quite a bit more than I ever did, or that I've ever learned about. So for me, this book is a must read, because I need to learn from Brad his experiences. Yeah, he's been on the show a couple of times, and I'm thrilled to have him every time. Last spring, he was here with another good friend of the podcast who's become very successful himself, our mutual friend, Chief George Ajuna. He has a great podcast, Beneath the Helmet, and he has a great, he went through his own break where he just ran out of steam doing the job he was doing as a chief of department. And it wasn't a huge department. It wasn't a huge metro, but it was a good-sized department. And now he is a certified coach for burnout and stress and PTSD. And he has other assets at his hand. So having them both last May on this program was eye-opening. Chief George's book had not come out yet, but it was in publication at the time. And he called it Burnt Around the Edges, A Guide to Mastering Stress and Surviving Burnout. Now we have Brad's book, which is Flames of the Fire, Firefighting Amidst the Explosions. And if you just heard our discussion today, we've gone from the gamut of some of our personal experiences. We've talked about what some of the things we've faced in the fire service, prepared or unprepared for, and especially in Brad's case, how he kept climbing to be a better representative to the people of the fire service by teaching, by explaining. And that's a lot of, if you go to a lot of the seminars, national or regional or local, you have a lot of people get up there and spout quite a bit off. You just don't always know how much of that is truth or how much is embellishment to be able to be a presenter at a conference. But between Chief Arjuna George and Brad Davidson, it's the real deal. Chief George went through this, his own traumatic situation, and like a phoenix, to use one of the best analogies in our business, he rose from the ashes to become a new person, a leader, looking out for other firefighters, no matter you live in the U.S. or Canada, no matter where you live. In his book, which I'm reading, still reading on the second time, Burned Around the Edges, is really a way to learn what can and often does occur to us and how he got by it. And he guides us on how, in the book, a little bit, you know, not like a full therapeutic session, but he gives thoughts in the book of how you can better yourself, make yourself a better whole person before you can make yourself a whole full firefighter. And so these two books should absolutely be on your reading list, because it's not fiction. This is reality. Real life, real firefighters, real business, real fires, real traumas, the real life of what it is to be a firefighter. Volunteer, pod pay, career, WUI, doesn't make a difference. There are always the changes that we face as firefighters. Some of them are surprises. We go on calls that we don't expect, okay? I only got to deliver one baby, but I'll tell you, it's something I won't ever forget in my life. And it wasn't either of my daughters. But it was a call and made it. I was on the ambulance. I was riding with EMS that day because they hired me as a fill-in, only because of the fact that the team that was in our district, it's called Base 3, worked a lot of calls with me when I was a firefighter. And when they were looking for a part-timer, they put all six of them put in my name, saying they had ridden with Station 17 and worked with me. And they said, this guy would be a great guy to work with us. And so I got called in and they asked me, you know, he said that we know you have a full-time job, so we're not going to interfere with that. We'd like to know if you'd like to occasionally fill in as a part-timer when needed. And he says, if you have to work, you just say no, because we're not going to draw you away from your paycheck. Yes, you'll get paid with us, but don't leave the job that you have. And we'll make it work. And that was, I was riding with them one night when we had our obstetric case. And talking about being nervous at the fire with a guy in the truck, I think I was more nervous when we found out we had to deliver the baby in the ambulance. But it was a wonderful experience.
Right.
Wonderful mom. Dad met us once we got to the hospital. Baby was adorable. We gave her, she had a good APGAR on birth. So that's one of the great things that we get to remember from our excursion into this.
True. And one of the bases for the book was, I describe a lot of traumatic, dangerous events, but they're along the way, you don't realize you're making a difference. Sometimes you make the real difference and you're able to save a life. And you know, really that's why we join, right? We want to serve others, and if we want to have the opportunity to help someone, save someone's life, and you know, you have to weigh them both, right? You have traumatic calls where there's fatalities, but you know, there are also sometimes many occasions where you can actually save a life.
Absolutely.
And I have to confess, I'm still a student of the craft.
Me too.
I'm a lifelong learner. And it was funny, Chief Halton met me in the hallway at FDIC and we gave each other a hug. And he just said quietly to me, Brad, he says, relax, you'll never know it all. But that was like really good encouragement, you know.
Oh, sure.
I was trying.
Absolutely.
But I probably never will know it all.
None of us will.
No.
None of us will. Are you going back to FDIC next week?
No. No, but I uh, Over the COVID thing and whatnot, I really wasn't prepared, but I'm getting more and more interested to going back and submitting as an instructor.
Good, good.
So I would like to do that, yes.
Our firefighters could learn a lot from you, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
I have. Oh, the reason I can't wait to read the book. Now let's tell our audiences, where can they get the book?
Well, you know, it actually comes as news to me recently that, you know, of course, Amazon Worldwide carries it, USA and Canada, Walmart USA, Booktopia carries it, Blackwell's in the UK. It's also available in Australia. Most of the major book retailers carry it, which was a surprise to me. And also what was a surprise to me is a lot of smaller book retailers also carry it. Another one is Chapters Indigo Books in Canada. So it's widely available.
That's great. That's great. And folks, also, if you have questions for Brad, you can send an email to him. Okay, if I can give him the email?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that his email is B as in Bravo, David S-O. So B, D as in Delta, A Apple, V Victor, I India, D Delta, S like in Sam, O as in Oscar, 870@gmail.com. Again, that's B David So 870@gmail.com. If you didn't quite catch it, don't worry about it. Send an email to us at dalmatprod@outlook.com. We'll get you the email directly to Brad Davidson. Brad, again, I got to say, it's a great podcast. Thank you for sharing a bit of your own personal history as from a firefighter all the way up to being an inspector and telling us and our viewers and audience, listening audience, about the book. And I hope the podcast will generate big uptick in your sales.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve. It was certainly an honor to be on your podcast, as I said before.
Thanks very much. We appreciate it. Folks, if you're watching the video, this is going to be the end of the video. If you're listening on the audio podcast, again, you'll know we'll have a couple of moments with some public service announcements for the fire service, and then we'll be back with a couple more segments after that. But my extreme thanks and gratitude to my friend Brad Davidson for joining us today to discuss some of his exploits as a firefighter in Manitoba, Canada, and now as an author of a very important book, Flames of the Fire, Firefighting Amidst the Explosions. It almost sounds like you were in the Philippines during World War II, that you're fighting explosions. But no, these are the kind of explosions that any one of us in our communities could face. So you want to read this book and learn from it. It's not going to be easy gliding reading like a fictional book. This is real life, real stuff. And that's what it's all about. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with another episode of 5LM Task Force next week. I don't want to give away the guest. Well, I will give away the guest. I believe it's going to be Will Cohut from New Jersey. We've had a couple of hangups every time we've scheduled a podcast with him, but he is the go-to guy in the state of New Jersey for establishing drone programs for public safety, police, fire, and EMS. And he's great. He knows his stuff inside out and backwards, and he's going to be joining us next week. To all of you, thanks for tuning in. Remember, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home. As always, take care of each other. Bye-bye now.
You're listening to 5LM Task Force.
Hey, I'm Joey Logano with Joe Gibbs Racing. The job of these firefighters is even tougher and more dangerous than mine. But we both rely on custom precision machinery to get us where we're going. And a small mistake, or a fraction of a second, can be the difference between life and death. Like these firefighters, my family expects me to come home from my job. I wouldn't think for a moment about getting in this bad boy without my seatbelts and other safety devices. I can't imagine anyone getting into one of these trucks without buckling up. And watch your speed so you can maintain control. If I don't cross the finish line, I don't win. And if you don't get to the scene, everybody loses.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust, speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your CISM team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
Hi, this is Steve. I'm recording this on Saturday, the 6th of April. And just over a week ago, last weekend, we had one of the most tragic weekends in public safety. We lost at least 3 firefighters, 2 of our brothers in blue. I believe there was 1 recovery operator who was lost because someone blew through the safety zone on an accident. And I believe there was an EMT who was killed in an auto accident. So, these are not the kind of topics we want to discuss. Sadly, these are topics that we must discuss. The loss of one in any of the public safety branches is a loss to us all, because we are a team. Fire, rescue, law enforcement, and EMS. We really are the foundation for public safety. And yes, we know that these jobs do come with a risk. And once in a while, we do lose one of our members, one of our brothers or sisters. Oh, and also in this past week, there are at least 3 notices of public safety members who took their own lives. And that is unconscionable. Don't say, oh, it was their problem, they couldn't cope. Yeah. But if you're so smart that you can diagnose them that way, why the hell didn't you say something to them when you may have suspected they weren't okay? Oh, it's none of my business. They gotta go find somebody on their own. None of your business? None of your business? What are you saying? What are you talking about? These people are our business. We go out and do everything we can for a citizen we don't know. And we'll give them everything, every ounce of strength we have to rescue them, help them feel better, save them, whatever the case is. Strangers. So you're going to tell me that as a member of public safety, you don't have an obligation to look out for your brothers and sisters? When you see there's a problem and you just say, well, I'm going to turn my head away. If I don't look at it, if I don't hear anything about it, it won't bother me. You're like the ostrich sticking its head in the sand. You want to hide and make believe everything is good and well. It's not. It's not. This isn't just about our behavioral health initiative. This is about who we are as people. How is it that we can give every ounce of our strength to take care of a stranger, but the people we work with, the people we work along, when they're not well, we have the obligation to take care of our own. If you're in the fire service, you hear a mayday over the radio, and you drop everything, even though you're not supposed to. But that's my buddy over there. I got to do it. BS. You have to do your task on the fire ground that your officer gave you. You don't just drop what you're doing, what your orders were, just to run over to the mayday site. That you do. But this past week has underscored the fragility of life those of us in public safety have and face. If you don't help someone, then you, by absence, are hurting that person. You're hurting them and their family, and you're hurting your group, your tour, your team. You're hurting them and all those around them. If you knew or know something has gone wrong for one of our brothers or sisters in the departments where we serve, in the community where we serve, then we are obligated by our oaths to take care of our own, just as we will take care of those in our districts. Think about it. What would you want to happen if all this happened to you? How's your family going to get through it when you, Billy's best friend, come to the house of mourning and you bring, I don't know, two roses? You think that's it? You think you've given up your obligation? You've met that obligation to take care because you brought two flowers to the house after the funeral? Again, more BS. You know, in the fire service, we always joke the two things we distaste the most are change and status quo. Well, I'll tell you something. If we don't make a change to a lot of the status quo, and that means caring for each other, looking out for each other, being there for each other, then you're not doing your job. Your oath is invalid. You don't even deserve to wear one of our badges. Because you took an oath to protect the people in your district, and that means your team members, not just the public. And that's my view.
We are really glad to have you listening to 5 Alarm Task Force. But we also want you to know that there are some other terrific fire service podcasts available. Here's the short list. Beneath the Helmet with Chief Arjuna George. Students of the Game with Danny Beauvais. B-Shifter with Chief John Vance, Josh Bloom, and Nick Brunicini. The Professional Brotherhood with Chief Brian Soller. The Five-Tool Firefighter with Nick Higgins of the Firehouse Tribune. Station Talk with Assistant Chief Tom Marciano. Flow and Vent. DTFF, Down to Fight Fire, British Columbia Volunteers. Better Every Shift with Aaron Zamzo. Firefighter Success with Captain Jim Moss. Code 3, The Firefighters Podcast. Make Do with Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy. Getting Salty. Fit to Fight Fire. Remember, to be a great firefighter, you must be always willing to learn. This message is brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. One mission, one family. First responders helping each other.
Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments? And that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You will be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Alternate? Did you know that 7 out of 10 firefighters in the U.S. are volunteers? And the number of volunteer firefighters is declining every year. Most American fire companies are working to recruit new members. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer fire departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques, as well as emergency medical services to protect your community. Volunteers are also needed to help with fundraisers, conduct fire safety programs, and pitch in around the fire station. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Presented by the National Volunteer Fire Council and 5 Alarm Task Force.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force, brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Inspector Brad Davidson, for joining us to discuss some of his past exploits in the fire service and some great discussion about some of our fire service leaders. And his book, Flames of the Fire, Firefighting Amidst the Explosions. Do you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC, the Firehouse Tribune, and LifeScan Wellness Centers, as well as our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Thin Red Line Decon, Hass Alert, Pry Guide Levers and Nesta Bars, Silver Arrow Coaching and Consulting, Crackle Magazine, the EFT Corporation, Health KPI, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info at the number 5-alarm taskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5 Alarm Task Force, on Facebook at facebook.com/5AAT-Charlie, and on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, the numeral 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-AlarmTaskForceCorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Till next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.